Philemon is the closest thing we have in the Bible to an email. I think if it had been written today, Philemon would have been the sort of thing that would have, the book of Philemon, that is the sort of thing that just would have been written in an email, typed out, sent, and done. It's sort of a, it's an add-on, really, to the book of Colossians. It's a short personal letter between friends. This is not Paul's instructions to the church at Colossae. This is Paul's personal, hey, there's a situation that we need to talk about, and there's this guy that we need to talk about, a mutual friend of ours, so this is what I want you to do. It's very personal, it's very compact, it's very limited in its scope. It's just a short personal letter. Now, the background of the book, written while Paul was imprisoned in Rome, and you see that we're not going to read these right now, but verses 1, 9, and 10, and 13 kind of give us that sense that it was written while he was in prison. Philemon was a Christian in Colossae who at one point owned a slave named Onesimus. And so we can kind of imagine how this would have gone. The letter to Philemon was probably sent at the same time as the letter to the Colossians. We see that in Colossians 4, 9 through, or 7 through 9. Tychicus will tell you about my activities. This is Paul writing, right? He's a beloved brother and faithful minister and fellow servant in the Lord. I have sent him to you, the Colossian church, for this very purpose, so he can tell you what I've been up to, that you may know how we are and that he may encourage your hearts. And with him, that is with Tychicus, I have sent Onesimus, our faithful and beloved brother, who is one of you. That is, Onesimus came from Colossae. They will tell you everything that has taken place here. Now, we don't know this for a fact. I read a bunch of commentaries about the relationship between Philemon and Onesimus. What had probably happened is some years ago, prior to the writing of the book of Philemon, Onesimus had been fed up with being a slave. He'd stolen some stuff from Philemon and fled to Rome. He'd taken probably whatever he could grab and just booked it out of town, fled to Rome. While he was in Rome, probably Onesimus met Paul and was converted. While he's living in Rome, doing whatever he's doing in Rome, we don't know exactly what kind of time period that would have been, but Paul's imprisoned in Rome. He's under house arrest. Somehow Paul meets Philemon. I'm going to get those. I just did it. I knew I was going to do it. Onesimus is the slave. Philemon is the owner. I've got to remember that. I always get them mixed up. So Paul, at some point in Rome, meets Onesimus and converts him. But I get the impression that he was converted without ever telling Paul his backstory, like what had gone on between him and Philemon. And at some point, Paul learns his background, right? He learns that he was a slave. He learns that he fled from Philemon, that he probably stole some stuff, which we get to in the, at the end of the book of Philemon. He says, if he owes you anything, bill it to my account. Probably the stuff that Onesimus had stolen. The existence of the book implies an important truth about conversion. And we talked at length about this on a number of topics, right? Conversion does not free us of our civil and legal obligations. It does not allow us to continue in sinful behavior. And it does not automatically excuse us from many of the consequences of sin. Now, salvation does free us from our spiritual debt and consequence. That's the definition of salvation, that I owe a spiritual debt to God that I cannot pay. That's what conversion and salvation does. But often we still have, and I got in quotes here, we have to face the music, as it were, with the physical consequences of our sin. And in the case of Philemon here, he wrongfully fled from Philemon, stole some stuff from Philemon, should be under ownership by Roman law, living with Philemon and doing whatever Philemon says as his owner. And Paul recognizes that conversion does not just automatically wipe that out. Onesimus owes a civil and legal obligation to Philemon. And so Paul sends Onesimus back as soon as he figures out, hey, Onesimus, you've done some bad things. You need to go back to Philemon. And that is the occasion of the book. And at some point in the modern reader, I've had this question several times. At some point, the modern reader of the New Testament will wonder, why didn't Paul openly condemn slavery? Because Paul talks about slavery quite a bit in the New Testament, Ephesians 6, 5 through 9. And the ESV has sterilized this. Bond servants, some of you have slaves. Some of you just have servants. It is a person who is under some sort of financial and legal obligation as a slave to a person. Bond servants, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart as you would Christ, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord and not to man, knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is a bondservant or is free. Masters, do the same to them, and stop your threatening, knowing that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and that there is no partiality with him. Paul very obviously is not saying what? Masters, free your slaves. It's not in the text. Why is that not in the text? Why did Paul not command the masters to free the slaves? Slaves, serve your masters well, and masters, stop your threatening. That's the extent of what he says. He keeps going. He says a similar thing in Colossians, which is the letter that accompanies Philemon, right? Colossians 3:22 through 4:1, bondservants obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart. This is something that Onesimus himself, as he arrives at Colossae, they all read the letter together. This would have been speaking directly to Onesimus. But with a sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. For the wrongdoer will be paid back for the wrong he has done, and there is no partiality. How would that have sounded to Onesimus, who has left, stole from Philemon, fled to Rome, he comes back with Paul. He may not know the content of the letter until he gets there. Philemon and Tychicus, they arrive at the church, let's say, for the sake of example. They arrive at the church building. They come in the door. Everybody greets them. And Tychicus says, hey, we've got a letter that we want to read to you. And Philemon or Onesimus is sitting right there. And maybe Philemon's sitting over there. And as they're reading through this letter, this is the section that they get to. What is Onesimus going to think? Paul is writing that about me because I'm the one who did that. I'm the one who stole from my master. And then he goes, and their masters treat your bondservants justly and fairly, knowing that you have a master in heaven. And Philemon sitting over there in the corner, he's going to immediately think, oh, that's to me. I'm the one that he's talking to right there. But again, what does he not say? Masters, free your slaves. 1 Timothy 6:1 and 2. Let all who are under a yoke as a bondservant regard their own masters as worthy of all honor, so that the name of God and the teaching may not be reviled. Those who have believing masters must not be disrespectful on the ground that they are brothers. Rather, they must serve all the better, since those who benefit by their good service are believers and beloved. This is even more explicit. Those who have believing masters. Implying what? That Paul expects them to remain in the slave-master relationship. He expects it to the extent that he has specific instructions for servants who have believing masters, implying that the believing masters are not under obligation to free their slaves. Why is that? Why did Paul not speak against the institution of slavery in Rome? There are a lot of other passages that speak to slaves. It seems that Paul was much more concerned, and this is true across the board, no matter what topic you talk about. It seems that Paul was much more concerned with how one behaved than the institution itself, whatever it happened to be, marriage, slavery. No, I'm not going to make that joke. Whatever situation you were in, Paul wanted you to behave a certain way. Your individual behavior, not the institution itself, was what Paul cared about. What do you do in the circumstance in which you find yourself, whatever that circumstance happens to be? Now, we should talk about some ancient slavery. As many as a third of the population of the major cities were bondservants or slaves. That's a lot. That is a substantial portion of the population. From all ethnicities and backgrounds, didn't matter what color your skin was, it didn't matter where you were born, it didn't matter what your socioeconomic status was at birth. Across the board, the average was about a third of the population of the major cities. From whatever background you were, that's the chances that you were in slavery. There were a variety of ways one became a slave. You could become a slave by war, that is, a nation comes in, conquers you, takes you back, and now you're a slave. You could become a slave by piracy. The way that we could think about this in modern terms was like they would sail across the sea and then a pirate would come on, capture the ship and take the people back, and now they were slaves. You could become a slave by debt. That is, you have an astronomical debt to pay. There's no way you're going to pay it off. So I'm going to become your slave and that will absolve my debt. You could become a slave by birth in special circumstances. And in some cases, more often than you would think, you became a slave because it was socially advantageous for you to do so. That is, you were of a particular social class, but if you could become a slave of a guy that was in this class, then at the end of your slave term, you might end up being down here as opposed to down here. So you became a slave because you could use that as a means of advancing yourself socially. For many, life as a bondservant was preferable to life as a beggar. Because if you don't have any means of making money, if you have so much astronomical debt that you can't pay it, your alternatives are pretty slim. I could go beg in the street corner, beg in the city gate, or I could become a slave and I could have a house and I could have food every day and I could have shelter and I could have clothing and I wouldn't have to worry about it. So for many people, slavery was preferable to life as a beggar. Why not become a slave if that's what my life's going to be? And indeed, selling oneself to a Roman was a viable avenue to citizenship. So you become a slave to a Roman citizen, and through the course of your bondservanthood, the course of your tenure, that doesn't sound right, but in the time that you were a slave to that Roman citizen, a lot of people ended up becoming Roman citizens themselves. So they sold themselves into slavery because that was a way that they could gain their citizenship. By all accounts, slavery in the Greco-Roman empires was a well-oiled machine, somewhat unique in history. Because you think about slavery, the most recent examples we have, they're not anything like this. This was a well-oiled machine, a part of their economy that had really had some unique features. Now, we know humans, because we're horrible. Humans are able to abuse any system. We understand that. There were abusive slave owners in Rome, just like there were abusive slave owners in any civilization throughout history. But by and large, slavery in the Roman Empire was a very different thing than slavery in many other nations. And there is a certain danger in sterilizing history, that is, making it seem less bad than it was. But comparisons between modern slavery and Roman slavery are at best surface level. You can't really compare the two. The circumstances were just very different. And so the book of Philemon is Paul's grand statement to slave owners. This is how I want you to treat your slaves. That's what the book of Philemon is. I don't expect you to free your slaves, but I do expect you to have a certain standard of behavior toward them. And so that is what Philemon is. We haven't even read any of the book. Perhaps the most interesting thing about the book is how Paul frames his instructions to Philemon. And we noted this in a couple of places. I think it was when we were talking about giving. Paul's sort of passive aggressiveness. We've talked about this before. That Paul, rather than just straight out command Philemon, frames it in a sort of backhanded, threatening, passive-aggressive way when he talks to Philemon. We'll read a couple passages. Philemon 1, 8 through 9. Accordingly, though I am bold enough in Christ to command you to do what is required, yet for love's sake I prefer to appeal to you. I, Paul, an old man, and now a prisoner also for Jesus Christ. Wow, Paul, really subtle. Did Paul have the authority to command? Well, sure he did. And it's sort of Paul saying he's appealing to him through love, but including that first sentence is what? And just by inserting that first sentence, he's reminding Philemon, oh yeah, I do have authority, right? Now he's making this appeal through love, but in the back of Philemon's mind, you know that he's got to think about Paul's authority in Christ. Not only that, but what does Paul do? I'm an old man and I'm a prisoner for Jesus. I know what Onesimus is going through. This appeal that he makes to Philemon. 13 and 14. I would have been glad to keep him, that is, keep Onesimus with me, in order that he might serve me on your behalf during my imprisonment for the gospel, but I prefer to do nothing without your consent, in order that your goodness might not be by compulsion, but of your own accord. And Paul's point in Philemon, one of the things that he really pushes across, is he wants Philemon to do the right thing by choice and not because he's being forced. There is a profound difference between being forced to do something and choosing to do it of your own accord, right? We talked about that. We've talked about that at length when we talk about the will of God. Why does God not just make everyone believe in him? He could do that, but the power of choice. And Philemon would have been forced into the right choice either through coercion or ignorance, right? Now, in this case, particularly in the case of Philemon, Paul would have compelled him to make the right choice through ignorance. That Philemon didn't know where Onesimus was, didn't know what Onesimus was doing, and so Philemon didn't have a choice because he didn't have knowledge. Paul is removing that barrier to choice by informing Philemon of what is going on so that Philemon might choose to do the right thing. And really what I think Paul wants him to do, right, is turn around and send Onesimus back to Rome. As part of your slavery to me, Onesimus, you owe me this debt. I'm your master. So what I want you to do as your master is go back to Rome and help Paul. I think it's very clear that that's what Paul wants to be done. I've remarked on this several times, but what Paul wants is Philemon to be spiritually mature. Not obeying out of coercion or compulsion, not obeying because he has to, but obeying because he wants to. That's what Christian maturity is. As this spectrum of belief, we start over here when we're converted. And again, I've said this many times before, but why are we mostly converted? Because we're afraid of going to hell. But as we progress along this line of Christian maturity, our obedience should change from fear to love and gratitude and desire, that I want to do what's right because God, it makes God happy and because this is the right thing to do, and not just because I don't want to go to hell. So even Paul, as he writes it this way, he's doing both things, right? You do need to obey because I'm an apostle, but I'd prefer it if you'd obey because it's the right thing to do. And there are several sort of backhanded compliments here as we go through this. Verse 4. I thank my God always when I remember you in my prayers because I hear of your love and of the faith that you have toward the Lord Jesus and for all the saints. By the way, shouldn't Onesimus be included in all the saints now? I'm so thankful for the love that you have for Christians. Oh, and by the way, Onesimus is now a Christian. This is verse 7. For I have derived much joy and comfort from your love, my brother, because the hearts of the saints have been refreshed through you. You've refreshed many saints. Now you have an opportunity to refresh a new saint, Onesimus. Verse 21, confident of your obedience, I write to you knowing that you will do even more than I say. So passive-aggressive. But Paul wants Philemon to treat Onesimus the way he has demonstrated that he treats Christians, right? Philemon is very clearly a good man. You just read it in Paul's writing. Philemon is clearly a good man. That he has done a lot to encourage the church. He's encouraged the Christians. And Paul, the whole point of Philemon is, or the book of Philemon, the whole point of the book of Philemon is, the way you've been treating these Christians for years, the goodness that you've shown to them, now you need to extend that to Onesimus because he is now your brother. He's not just your slave now. He's now your brother. So do all the things that you have been doing, do them for Onesimus too. So while there's a lot Paul doesn't say about what slaves and masters, specifically slaves, be free from your masters, free your slaves, what does he want Philemon to do ultimately? Verses 15 and 17. For this perhaps is why he was parted from you for a while, that you might have him back forever, not as a bondservant, but more than a bondservant. As a beloved brother, especially to me, but how much more to you, both in the flesh and in the Lord. So if you consider me your partner, receive him as you would receive me. He's laying it on thick. We keep reading. Oh, no, we don't. This is what happens when I get out of sync. Our Christian relationship should trump our earthly one. The fact that you are a fellow Christian, fellow heir, should matter more to me than the fact that you are, whatever, my friend, my spouse, my brother, my child. Why? Because being my spouse, being my friend, being my child, being my brother, those all end, right? They all end eventually. Philemon's master-slave relationship with Onesimus, that would end too. What doesn't end? my relationship with you as a Christian. Isn't that the thing? The one relationship that's going to endure forever and ever and ever? So, yes, I have these earthly relationships with you, but what should come first above all other things, all of the considerations in how I treat you, what should come first is I'm going to spend eternity with you. That should change the way I perceive my actions and my priorities and how I treat you. That's what he's trying to tell Philemon. Look, he's your bondservant. I understand that. But now, even though he's your bondservant, he's more than that now too. He's someone that you're going to spend eternity with. Change the way you behave around Onesimus. The theme of the book is the transformational power of the gospel. Two things that are transforming. One is Onesimus' transformation. Verse 11, formerly Onesimus was useless to you, but now he is indeed useful to you and to me. He was useless how? Well, he was a slave that ran away. Pretty useless. But in Rome, apparently what had been going on, he's converted to Christianity, and now he's been helping Paul. Why does Paul need help? Because Paul's under house arrest. How much work can you do as an evangelist if you can't leave your house? Well, Paul needs a lot of help in Rome. And apparently Onesimus has been one of the people that has been helping Paul in his work in Rome. And so formerly he was useless to you, but now he's so useful. He's been transformed by the power of the gospel into someone who is eminently useful, no longer as a bondservant, but as more than a bondservant, as a beloved brother. The transformation in the relationships. But Philemon also is supposed to transform, especially to me, how much more to you, both in the flesh and in the Lord. The transformation of the relationship that Philemon had with Onesimus, yes, perhaps, still as slave master, but now as brother and brother. So if you consider me your partner, receive him as you would receive me. Essentially, Paul is asking Philemon, treat Onesimus differently now. And we don't know. It's one of those things I wish we knew. We don't know what their relationship was like before this. Before Onesimus ran away, we have no idea. We have no idea how Philemon treated him. We could infer, perhaps, that Philemon was less than an ideal owner, less than an ideal slave owner. Maybe he didn't treat Philemon the way he should have. Maybe he did. I don't know. So Onesimus runs away, sent back to Philemon. Treat him differently now. Treat him as you've been treating your fellow brothers and sisters in Colossae. Be different than you were. Isn't that the power of the gospel? The reconciliatory power, the power to reconcile people who were formerly enemies. Now they no longer have to be enemies. Now they can be friends. As it is with many other things, Paul is less concerned with changing culture than he is with changing individuals. And again, it is, that word still has not come to me. Conspicuous. Oh, it just came to me. It's conspicuously absent. What is not in the book of Philemon? Philemon set him free. That's not in there. That's the one thing that we would expect to be in the book. Why is that not in the book? Why does Paul not command Philemon to free him? And we've talked about this at length, the slavery in Rome. There could be a host of reasons why it would be a bad idea to release Onesimus. Maybe Onesimus is using this slavery, or originally was using this slavery, as a means of gaining Roman citizenship. Maybe he originally had a debt that was so big to pay that he sold himself into slavery as part of releasing of his debt. And if Philemon just sets him free, maybe that debt goes back into effect and now he still owes all this money. There are a number of reasons under Roman culture why it might have been a bad idea, economically and socially, to release Onesimus from his debt. But Paul doesn't care so much about that, right? Paul is less concerned with changing culture than he is with changing individuals. The power of the gospel is not in its ability to transform the laws of a country. The power of the gospel is not in its ability to transform the way society thinks about things. The power of the gospel lies in the ability to completely transform individuals. To change them from something that was enemy to God, something that was useless in God's eyes, something that served no purpose in eternity, to change people into something that is glorious and great and awesome, not through their own power, right? Not through the power of the people, but through the power of the Spirit that resides within them. That's the power of the gospel. Individual, personal transformation. And that can apply to anyone in your life. The people that you think, they'll never convert. The people that you think, well, he'll never believe. The people that you think, well, they just treat me bad all the time. I don't really like them at all. All of them have the potential to be different than they are. You want to change culture, that's fine. But how do you do that? You do that by changing enough of the individuals within that culture. The job of the Christian is to figure out how to live righteously no matter what is happening in their society. There was a set of rules and regulations for Roman slavery that existed, and Paul's instructions to them are not change slavery. Paul's instructions to them are, you find yourselves in master-servant relationships, make it work righteously. Live righteously, even though you find yourself in the circumstance. Whatever circumstance you find yourself in, your job is to figure out, how can I live in this circumstance and give glory to God? How can I affect the other people around me? No matter what it is that's going on in your life, I don't know. You have a ton of things going on in your life. Not that, of course, we can't endeavor to change society, right? I'm not saying that. But how do you balance society versus the individual? Are you so concerned with what's going on in Washington that you forget your neighbor has a soul and might be lost? That you miss the opportunity to teach your coworker or your friend or your family member because you're so concerned with the big picture? Real transformation and change happens because individual Christians reach out to the individual lost souls around them. It always has been, and it always will be. And even if you don't get your way as a society, civilly, legally, your obligation remains the same, to live righteously and to bring others to righteousness.